Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. We talk with astronomer Jean Creighton every month about the night sky. She is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee, which is a great place to go when it's not dark enough to see the night sky, or it's cloudy, or if you just like to learn more about what you're seeing. But it is not the only planetarium in Wisconsin, and if you happen to find yourself up north this summer, there is a unique planetarium that welcomes guests as well. It is the Kovac Planetarium in the tiny town of Monaco, and it is the creation of a unique man, Frank Kovac Jr. Kovac and his planetarium are the subject of a new book by Milwaukee area writers Avi Lank and Ron Legro. They're with us in the studio this morning to share the story. Welcome.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you for having us.
Paint a picture of this place for us, for people who are used to planetariums like the one at UWM or the Public Museum or even the Adler Planetarium in Chicago. How does the Kovac Planetarium compare?
Well, just to begin with, it's smaller, much smaller. And secondly, it isn't like those. Those planetariums have systems that project information on domes. Now they do it with computers, but the computer makes the star field. And you sit there and the stars move across the dome.
As they would in the night sky.
Right. And this is the big projection, almost looks like a spaceship that comes
right
out of the middle, and this projects the images.
Correct.
on the walls of the wall of the globe.
Right. And this planetarium, the Kovac Planetarium in Monaco, Wisconsin, which is what the book is about, is the world's largest rotating globe planetarium, which is to say you come to the planetarium, you walk inside it, and it rotates around you with the stars painted on it and glowing at you in the dark. It's one of only four of its type in the world, and it's by far the largest.
And the others are antiques. When Frank was a little boy and
– Frank Kovac. He's the man.
Frank Kovac Jr., who is the subject of the book, was a little boy growing up in Chicago. He headed over to the Adler Planetarium with his dad. His dad gave him a telescope. He got hooked on the stars and stargazing. You can't see the stars in cities like Chicago or Milwaukee very well because of light pollution. So he wanted to go out in the country and do it. But he would go to the Adler Planetarium, one of the great planetariums in the country or the world. He saw this hanging globe, and it was a representation of the Earth. And it turned out it was actually a hollow globe planetarium that rotated, and it was built in the early –
It was built before World War I.
To train Navy pilots in navigational – their ability to star sight their path. And he was a little bit crestfallen to discover after he had begun working on his own planetarium that somebody had invented this concept earlier than he. But his is still the only working, profit-making planetarium of its kind. It's the largest. It's 22 feet in diameter. And it's housed in a big sheet metal building. And it's out in the middle of the woods in northern Wisconsin. You have to really look hard to find this place.
Well, and so you mentioned the Adler Planetarium, and it kind of plays a major role in this story because without the Adler Planetarium in Chicago, Chicago would be kind of an unlikely place for anyone to develop a love for the night sky.
Yeah, well, Frank, when Frank was a child, he took classes at the Adler for a while and realized that his math skills were not up to what was going to be required to really look at the heavens the way they wanted him to. He wanted to be an astronaut, but he realized quite early on that that probably was a little bit beyond his capabilities. He eventually did join the Air Force, served in the UP at the old K.I. Sawyer base for 3 years. And when he got out, he had been buying land in Monaco, Wisconsin. He moved there and he immediately built an observatory and after a while decided he needed something more reliable. And so he built this planetarium.
Many cloudy nights up there. Frustrating if you want to stargaze and there are 5,000, 6,000 visible stars and you can't see them because of the clouds. So he thought, on those nights, I'll have a planetarium.
In addition to the trips to the Adler, who or what were the other formative figures in his early life that paved the way for what he has accomplished?
The key formative figure is his late father, who gave him his first telescope when he was a young fellow. And the book goes into the history of the family. It was an immigrant family from Hungary. And his father – he remembered his father describing how when he was living in the old country, which in their case was Hungary, they would often go out camping because it was a cheap, free thing to do and picnic and stay out and watch the stars and how blessed the skies were with them. When Frank was a little boy, his dad, who was a working man, blue-collar guy – came home one day and he had found like at a pawn shop a little 10-inch telescope, and he gave it to Frank, and that's where Frank's interest really took off.
Also, I gather when Frank was a young man, that was when the first incarnation of Cosmos came on the air.
Yes, he was very, very influenced by that, to the point that he actually painted on the wall of his bedroom what he envisioned an approach to Saturn would have looked like and the starship that Carl Sagan had put together to make Cosmos. It's still there, as a matter of fact. It's still in the house in Chicago. You can't go see it, obviously. It's a private residence.
There is a picture of the book, though.
And there's a picture of it in the book. That's right.
And it sounds like a lot of trips to American Science and Surplus as he was growing up.
Yep. The one up in Skokie, I think it was in the Old Orchard Mall.
A lot of people like looking through telescopes and are fascinated by the night sky. When did the seeds of his work as a guy who could explain this stuff to the public start to be sown?
Very, very early on. He actually built a planetarium in the garden shed of his home on the west side of Chicago and would invite his school fellows over to see it, I believe as early as junior high school. This came out of his own mind. You know, he was inspired by the Adler. He was inspired by Carl Sagan and Cosmos. But all the rest of it is really self-taught. Frank is a genius mechanic, among other things, because he had to figure out how to build this thing besides just conceiving that he was going to do it in his mind.
Well, and the other thing that sounded like it was a stroke of luck was the place he chose to build this. There are no real zoning laws that he had to worry about in order to be able to just put the thing up.
Yeah, he went to the township of Monaco and said, what are the laws? And they said, check in Rhinelander at the county courthouse. And he checked at the county courthouse and they said, are you on a lake? And he said, no, I'm back in the woods. And they say, well, it's up to the town. So it was a great catch-22. And it turns out that he's right on the border with Forest. He's in Oneida County, but it's right on the – right very near the border of Forest County. If he'd been in Forest County, he would have had all kinds of – not problems. He would have had other challenges because there are regulations that would have regulated any structure that was built.
Well, and so who's going to this thing? It's – you know, Monaco, Wisconsin is not near anything except for Rhinelander, which is, you know, a thriving municipality of, 10,000 people or so.
Try about 8,000.
Yeah. So, you know, who is it drawing?
Well, for one thing, this has been a slow but steady growth of interest up there because people are rather proud of it, the locals. There is more tourism up there. This used to be – the entire population of Forest County is in four digits. And so when they tipped the fact that Frank had this, which wasn't immediate, they got very excited and started promoting it. And meanwhile, he was attracting high school tours, church groups, disabled organizations, that could retirees, people like that. And he was very good at doing it. He was a one-man band. He did it all on his own. It's grown by word of mouth. And in fact, this book was made possible by word of mouth because my family's housekeeper in Whitefish Bay one day told us that they had been going to their cottage near Crandon and had seen the road sign for the planetarium, which was new at the time, drove in there, were totally fascinated by it, and said, you ought to go see it. So the next time I was up visiting Mom in nearby Antigo, I drove up and looked at the planetarium and thought, this is a terrific story. And in the course of talking about it with Abby over a year or two.
Easily a year.
Yeah. Yeah. We said, hey, you know, it'd be fun to do this together.
Well, this is not a Nobel Prize-winning scientist, and the visitors to the Kovac Planetarium, even with its increased popularity, still number in the thousands per year. What was so compelling about it as a story that you said, well, this could be a book?
Frank Kovac Jr., and just the audacity of doing this. The man, he's an original. He's absolutely an American original. He is a genius mechanic. He's extremely soft-spoken but very determined, and he isn't immodest, but he's not a braggart. You meet him, you understand that this is something that is just if you go up there and see it, it's almost like, what did they say about jazz? I can't tell you what it is. If you have to ask me, I can't tell you what it is. That's why it just seemed so obviously that there was more to it than just saying I went and I saw these this thing float around me. You know, I took a look at it. It's hung from a spring that's connected to the ceiling of this thing, and then it's on a track that has a – I think it's a quarter horsepower or maybe a third horsepower engine that makes it rotate. And Frank made that all up. He's got stuff there that he could patent that he hasn't bothered to patent because that's not what he's interested in. When I worked as a business journalist, one of the things I observed was that the most interesting people that I had to write about were not the people who were telling me they had this great idea to make money and they were going to, you know, become the master of the universe. They were people who were totally fascinated by what they were doing.
I think that's why this book is resonating in its early release. People love stories about individuals who have a dream, a lifelong dream, and spend years of struggle, and they don't know how they're going to get there, but they have pluck and determination, and they succeed in spite of the obstacles. And Frank basically did this on his own, out of pocket, over the years as he could afford it. Many setbacks that would send most of us running for safety, not just for, to something else. And I mean, I think people like that.
Well, right. And one of the interesting things is you might imagine that, you know, and I'll put in air quotes here, you know, real astronomers might look down their noses at this. But you speak with some, including the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium here in Milwaukee, who's on this show quite a bit. And they have admiration for this guy.
Yeah. Gene Creighton went up there with Ron one snowy January day.
Yeah, we had to fight our way up there and back.
But I had enough sense to be in Guatemala.
But she was clearly, you know, taken with what he had done. And we had asked her, would you please come up here and see if he painted these stars in their correct positions and whether it works as a planetarium. And so she went up and heard a little bit of his presentation, looked at his dome, asked questions about it, and on the ride back just said, it works. You know, he doesn't have a degree in astrophysics, but he knows what he's talking about. And she was actually surprised in a couple of points because at one point she pointed to, and I forget the name of the cluster, but the Spider Nebula, I think it was. And she was looking at this night dome, and it's just reflecting from its stored light. And she says, what's that over there? And she pointed with her finger, and Frank said, well, that's the Spider Nebula. And she said, you can see that up here in Monaco. And that was the point of this too, is Frank painted the dome so that on a perfect night, what you saw in the dome is what you would see if you walked outside and looked straight up.
This is almost like the Miller Park of stargazing in the North Woods. You know, you know that even if it's cloudy, you have a chance to see the stars.
One nice thing is that he's already on the list, the Kovac Planetarium, which, by the way, is named after not him but his father, his deceased father, is already on the list of top architectural wonders in Wisconsin. The Calatrava is up there and you know, a bunch
Taliesin.
Of other, the Taliesin. And then he's in, I think he's still in the honorable mentions. And then on another list, which is top places to go visit if you're a tourist, he's like number 7. I mean, it's – and this has all happened in the space of a few years. And again, mostly by word of mouth, but hopefully now that we've written this book, they'll read the book and decide to go.
Well, it is a delightful story. And Ron and Abby, thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks, Mitch.
Ron Legro and Abby Lank are the authors of The Man Who Painted the Universe, The Story of a Planetarium in the North Woods, published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. They are both former writers for the Milwaukee Journal, and Abby Lank is, of course, a regular essayist on Lake Effect. They will talk about the new book Monday evening at Boswell Book Company.